So that was a layout. Now, interactions is another one of those things that is Chrome. And so we want to get it off of our design surface and do something better with it. And what's better? The best thing is to integrate commands into the content itself. And where you can't, then you can leverage the edge. You've got an app bar that's in the bottom edge, and the user will know after using Windows 8 for approximately 3.5 minutes that they can swipe up from the bottom pretty much any time and get an app bar.
Right.
And they'll also know that they can swipe from the right and get a charms bar. And we're leveraging the edge. It's like we're getting real estate we didn't have before because the user can just pull something from off the screen.
Sure. And even for those that don't have that touch device yet, they're going to get used to things like right-clicking somewhere means the same as swiping up.
Yep.
You know, those kind of things.
Yeah. It's not just touch. You can use the keyboard. You can hit Win-C, and you can pull up that charms bar anytime, anywhere. Win-Z will pull up the app bar. You also want to try to provide commands like user input and errors in context, so they land in flyouts that are easy to dismiss right next to where they actually make sense. Here's a slide that has a problem with it. And that problem is that these images are inherently, by themselves, going to invite the user to touch them if they want to see more. And yet we've rendered some extra Chrome on the screen here in the form of those little arrows. Those are not necessary by any means to lead the user into clicking on a picture. Even a child would know that if I want to know more about the scarf or the football or the shopping cart, I just touch it. So we can let that content command for itself. Let's look at another example. Here are a number of products. The images are not there, but imagine they are. And we've got that Chrome more exaggerated. It's repeated. There are now three buttons, and they're repeated on every single product. Now, this is discoverable, but it's also busy and distracting.
That's right.
If we can follow good Windows 8 design, we can take all of that away and instead invite the user to select one or more products by swiping down on them. And then we'll automatically bring that app bar up from the bottom and give them the same exact options.
Yeah, much cleaner, very nice looking.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's our implementation of taking advantage of the edge. The bottom edge is the app bar. And when I'm looking at this newsreader app, I might say, hey, I want to refresh this and see if there's any more content. And so I would swipe up from the bottom, and all of a sudden there's my refresh or my ability to add feeds. I can use the right edge of my screen by swiping over from the right. Now all of a sudden I can share content, or I can look for an article about Chipotle steak salad. So that's leveraging the edge. Now look at this image. This is a great example of immersing the user in the content that they love. This is an image that's it's a beautiful image, and it's taking up the entire screen. That's great. Now, when the user wants to do something and he taps the screen, which is an intuitive step, then and only then it brings down the header and the back button and it brings up the app bar. So that's an excellent experience for the user.
Yeah, that's nice.
Very immersive. And this app bar is going to have commands on the right that are global, and we'll talk about this more later, and ones on the left that are contextual that have to do with the whatever the user has selected. But these app bars, you've got a lot of control over what shows up on those app bars. I mentioned that we wanted to show content in context, and by that I mean that, for instance, whenever a user wants to add an RSS feed, he might touch a plus button, and we want the prompting for the user input to show up in a small flyout right next to that plus button so that it makes sense. The user's eye doesn't have to go somewhere else, and he doesn't have to figure out how that works. These are lightweight and dismissible. If you touch outside of it, it just goes away. We don't force the user to answer somehow before they're allowed to continue. They can just touch outside of it and it goes away. Likewise, errors. You want to put the error text where the user needs to go to resolve the error so that it's in context. Now, navigation. First of all, navigation in a well-designed app, little need. Little need for explicit navigation controls. Okay, so you don't need to put Chrome on the screen to help the user find other things. What we're trying to do here is we're trying to tell the user not about where they might go. We want to tell them about where they are and then let the structure of the app help them to find where they want to go. There are two general navigation models in Windows 8. There's flat, which you'll find in things like Internet Explorer, where you basically just have tabs for, you know, peer navigation structure. And then we have a three-tier navigation model, and I'm going to show you what that looks like. So here's flat. Flat is just multiple instances of the same basic thing, so there's not really any vertical or any hierarchical organization to that. But then the three-tier navigation model is highly encouraged. This is a good user experience, and again, when users come to expect that they have these three tiers, all of a sudden they know how to navigate your app. Suddenly they can intuit that. It's made up of a hub, sections, and detail. Now the hub is to be the overview of your entire app. Everything that's possible in your app should bubble up to the hub in some way. Not all of the individual section needs to represent itself there, but the user needs to know that it's possible to do that in your app that needs to be surfaced on the hub. Let's look at a pretty large slide here. This is a sample travel app, and notice the hub is a panoramic view. It's multiple screens wide, and it features all of the different things that I can do in this app. I can look at featured destinations, last-minute deals, my trips, or city guide. Now I know the extent of my capabilities in this app. We don't want to leave huge sections out of the hub and make them, you know, just have to be discovered manually by browsing around. They need to be surfaced. The second level, the sections, is your opportunity to completely flesh out each individual section. Give the user, for instance, the access to all of the destinations, all of the featured destinations that they might want to visit. And then the lowest level, the details, is your opportunity to tell the user everything about one individual entity. So a destination, that's an entity. And at the bottom level, at the details level, that's your opportunity to show the picture, show the title, show all the content about that destination, maybe links to from that destination that the user might be concerned with, maybe maps, whatever. Now, if you try to implement navigation by putting links like you see on the screen now, that's Chrome, because those are static. Those sit right where they're at, and when you touch them, the screen changes, and you're taking up that real estate for Chrome, and you don't need to. You just don't need to. You can put those section headers with the content that they belong to, and it's more connected with the content, and it doesn't take up that real estate. Here too, putting those links in the header, Chrome, not necessary. Now we have this concept called semantic zoom that we're going to get to see a little later, and semantic zoom is excellent for orienting the user. If the user is looking at a big list of data, he can pinch zoom, and instead of just changing the size and zooming out optically, the user actually gets a different view of that list so that it's more logically zoomed out and he can get a feeling for where he's at without having to pan five screens. I'll show you an example. Here's the Contoso Travel, and it's panning two screens. So that's not very many, but I would still have to swipe to see all this. But if I pinch zoom, I can bring all of those sections down to individual tiles. Now it all fits on one screen and the user can say, okay, this is what's available to me on this page, on this hub, and now he can even navigate to the very last one without having to do any panning whatsoever. So semantic zoom is something to be utilized. Anytime you have a list of data that's weighty, you want to provide a semantic zoom that gives the user a better view of that. So that is content before Chrome. That's how to take that layout and that interaction and that navigation and utilize some of these design strategies for making your app really give the user this consistent experience so that as soon as they start using it, they're going to go, this feels natural. I know how to use this.
That's awesome. So that was the bigger portion of kind of that, because that's such an important design trait.
Yeah, hugely critical. Yep. Now, there are more traits of a good app. One of them is that the app should be fast and fluid, and this speaks to the animation and the touchability of the app. A lot of the fast and fluid is given to you for free. If you use a built-in control, it's going to be fast and fluid. It's implemented asynchronously. The animation is done for you. It's you don't really have to think about it too much. But there are some times when you're making an app, especially if you're getting more complex, you're taking more control over the UI, which you as a developer have a lot of control over, a lot of low-level control should you want it. And when you do, you should make sure that you implement asynchronicity and you design your code right so that it's always a fast and fluid interface. The user should never get jitters, never get delays or lags, anything like that that's gonna make them feel anything less than completely connected with their content. Do keep the hands and fingers in mind. Windows 8 is going to be installed on on computers that are showing on 50-inch televisions, on desktops, on tablets, all over the place. And if they're on a tablet, they may very well be using their thumbs close to the edges of the screen. And so it makes sense to put some of the critical commands close to the edges of the screen. Not all the commands have to go there, but keep that in mind for sure. Definitely engineer for the hands. Snapping and scaling beautifully. Because this is going to be showing on all kinds of different PCs, all kinds of different screen sizes and whatever, and even orientations, landscape and portrait, you want to make sure that you're always snapping and scaling right. And we actually have some demos later today where we show you how to take advantage of the CSS media queries and some JavaScript events that just react rightly so that when the user rotates, bam, it snaps and shows the right way. You might be showing in full landscape. You might be showing the top image, the top graphic there shows you what it looks like when your app is snapped next or is filled next to an app that's been snapped. That's called fill mode. And then on the bottom, your app might be snapped. And notice that in the snapped view, it looks very different from when it's in full or fill. Now all of a sudden it's a vertical list. This is one of those few times in Windows 8 where we actually pan vertically. And then on the right, you may have the full screen, but it might be portrait. And you may or may not want to change your content or the layout of your content whenever you're portrait. When your app is snapped, when, because your app will be snappable. You can't submit an app to the store and expect it to get through without implementing intentionally the snapped case. Because your app will be snappable. It just will look really bad if you don't implement it. And you do still have an app bar, so you've got to account for that app bar. And also don't forget that you need to consider if you want to do something different for your fill state. When a user snaps another app next to yours, you have a few pixels, you have 320 pixels less to deal with horizontally, and you might want to change your layout just a little bit.
We had a question regarding all of the snapping, by the way. Can the application block being snapped?
That's a good question. What's the answer?
The answer is yes, it can. You can make it so an app so that your app does not support Snap View.
I didn't know. Are you sure?
I'm sure.
We'll have to look at that.
Yeah.
I know that you can make it so that your app can't be put into portrait, but I don't think you can avoid Snap View.
I guess there's a controversy between the two of us.
I love it.
We'll find out at lunch.
I think this controversy demands a wager.
Yeah, I agree.
We'll get into that. Awesome. Okay, so I want to let you know what happens when the user goes to Best Buy and throws down some extra cash for higher resolution displays, and when they go throw down some cash for a bigger screen. Okay? Now, when they throw down some cash for a higher resolution display, the actual display doesn't end up looking any different to the end user. It's still a touch it's still a touch-based operating system, and we don't want the touch targets to get small and not support a good touch by the user's finger. So the Windows 8 implements scaling, automatic scaling. So you'll notice that the two tablets on my screen are the same physical size, but the one on the right has a higher resolution. Now it ends up rendering exactly the same because of the scaling that occurs. And so you have one physical link to an image in your project, but if you put three assets in your project, three JPEGs with this naming convention, scale 100, 140, and 180, and you provide all three of those JPEGs, Windows 8 will automatically grab the correct one based on what scaling it's opted for. Have you actually used that before?
I haven't, no, but that's a very good tip trick.
Yeah. Now, when the user throws down for a larger screen, they want some real estate. And so the scaling doesn't happen for a larger screen. The scaling only happens for a higher resolution. So here's the same resolution on a 10.6-inch screen and a 27-inch, like TV. Now, all of a sudden, the user has more room, and you can see that the layout of this app has accommodated that. So you're going to have screen sizes, and notice what happens to the content as the screen size grows. We want to make sure that we use the right contracts. So we're going to talk in extent about these, but we want to implement searching, sharing, settings, file picker, play to. Implement these contracts so that you can give the user that great native experience. We're going to talk about investing in a great tile. Your tile actually not only informs the user with information brought right to their start screen, but it also invites them into your app. So it's a great way to get your app to be more launchable because your user sees it more, sees the information, and for instance, wants to browse into it. We want to make sure that the user feels connected and alive by giving them good notifications and only the notifications that they would expect and want and invite so that we're not annoying them. And then also we're going to talk today about roaming to the cloud. Make sure that you roam to the cloud with the user's preferences and even the user's tasks, because if the user is working on a bus writing an email and he gets interrupted and then he opens up Windows 8 at work, you can roam that task to the cloud so that when he starts up his mail program again, it's right there ready for him to keep writing that email. So it's pretty impressive for the user, and it's actually really easy to implement as a designer. We'll talk about that today too. And then do you want to tell us about the design principles real quick, these five different principles?
I do. In fact, I think that what's kind of interesting is if you look at the middle one, for example, we've already kind of talked about being fast and fluid. So the irony is that the eighth of these traits is five principles, of which one of them is more a principle perspective than a trait perspective of the app. But yeah, if we could switch over to my screen, which is essentially going to be the same. The first part is showing pride and craftsmanship. And I love the idea here that principally when you are involved with whatever application you're going to be designing or developing, you know, are you going to take the time and energy to actually work on the little things, the things that matter? And are you going to be fussy and make sure that experience is truly complete? You know, not leaving it off something to be desired, but you're really, really complete and it's polished at every single stage. You know, sometimes developers can get to the point where it looks like, well, they ran out of time, you know, for the, well, we don't want that experience. And now that we've discussed, as Jeremy brought out, since we have a less is more kind of a mindset, then that means, well, we can actually really complete things because we're not distracting the user with a whole bunch of stuff on the screen. So be polished and clean and show that pride in the craftsmanship. Now, the next one is do more with less. So Jeremy stated this earlier. It's really about solving the issue of removing those distractions, and we're not really caring about it. It only takes one click to get to anything in the app. That's not the issue here. The issue is we don't want all those distractions on the screen. We want the users to, as Jeremy highlighted earlier, they should be immersed in what they love. The content is king. You know, that's what they're going to explore. And that purposeful experience is going to be show them what's relevant. You know, that one example you had where that tiny, tiny little RSS feed was, you know, shoved at the bottom of the screen. Well, that's not immersing the user. But if you show them the most relevant content, that's going to be much more effective. So we did talk about fast and fluid, but I think we kind of talked about the fast, but I want to talk a little bit about the fluid too. The fluid means, you know, we were kind of joking around earlier talking about, you know, well, what application wants to be known as slow and choppy, right? No one does. But the reality is that everyone thinks fast, but what would it really mean to be fluid? And this is an opportunity for you to take advantage of the simplest animations that can gracefully go from one thing to another. Yesterday we talked about transitions that you can apply with CSS. There's some great opportunities there, as well as some of the animations that are available with the WinJS libraries that we're going to find out about, so that you can glide and provide a very nice, effective means to transition from one thing to another. That's kind of where you can get that fluid experience instead of all of a sudden, okay, we're here. Oh, okay, we're here. Is it more staccato? You know, we want that nice, fluid experience. And that's something that you have to give purposeful thought to. And it's those little tiny things that are going to make the difference.
Yeah, if the user only notices it subconsciously, that's still a win.
Exactly. In fact, if they have to consciously see it to some extent, it might be a loss.
Exactly.
So, now the next point is really interesting. Authentically digital. And what this is really talking about is embracing that digital medium. I mean, let's face it, we're looking at a screen And we want to embrace the fact that we are in a digital realm. So instead of trying to recreate reality all over the place, we want to take advantage of that clean, crisp, digital experience that allows the users to clearly understand what needs to be done. And so use crisp colors. Use those bold, vibrant images. And you're going to get much more effective use of that than trying to map to the real world. So the next one is winning as one. And you kind of touched on this too, Jeremy, in that you want to take advantage of that ecosystem. Winning as one means take advantage of those device features, work with other apps, which we're going to see how that can be done with some contracts a little later. Use the system and take advantage of the fact that everyone's going to be kind of doing the same thing. Yeah, if they need to get to settings, they know how to get to settings from anywhere. They need to do a search. They're going to know how to do that from anywhere. So take advantage of that uniform one way of doing things. And this can even extend into things such as like roaming settings and even going to the cloud where everything's unified even across devices as well.
I want to add something to that one. I think about the user who's at the airport and he's getting on an escalator. And by the time he gets to the bottom of the escalator, he wants to log into his trip information and get his hotel address. He wants to bring that over into his mapping program and see restaurants that are around his hotel, get reviews on them, find one that he likes, book a table, and then he wants to take that reservation information and send it to a colleague so that his colleague can meet him for lunch and they can put an appointment on their calendar. That's a whole usage scenario. It's not just thinking about the user coming into your app and then exiting your app. It's thinking about the whole journey that they're going to take in that usage scenario. And you want to be in that usage scenario because that's going to thrill the user when they get to the bottom of the escalator, they put their tablet back in their bag, and they know all the stuff that they've done.
Yeah, that's really good. That really indicates that we have to think beyond just our isolated app.
We
think beyond in how we can share and work with the other apps as well.
Yep.
So that takes us to our summary for this particular module.
Yeah, and there's one more thing I wanted to talk
Please.
About. You know, the design of your app, like I mentioned, is not just the visual design of it. It's the whole user experience, which involves all of the thinking about how the user is going to behave in your app and so on. And it also has a lot of implications into how you as the developer structure your app architecturally. And with Windows 8 apps, you probably don't want to just create one project and have everything in your Windows 8 project and try to get by with that. You're going to want to end-tier your application, and you're going to want to move as much of that as you can to the cloud. And where it makes sense, you're going to want to move some of the functionality of your app out into WinRT components. They're also called WinMD components. And there was a little bit of discussion about this in the chat room yesterday, but I just wanted to make it explicit. The more you can move out of your Windows 8 app and leave it to just be the user interface, the better off you're going to be from a reusability standpoint for sure. Azure Mobile Services, like I said, that we're going to look at later today is awesome. And the stuff that you can move into Azure Mobile Services is going to make it portable. The parts, if you're making, let's say you're making a pretty complex calculator app that does, you know, scientific calculations and all kinds of stuff. You can choose to put those calculations in your JavaScript in your Windows 8 app, but that might not be the best choice. Maybe you want to create yourself a C# project or a C++ project, a library that is extended as a Windows 8 WinRT component, and then consume that component in your Lite UI, in your JavaScript app. And then that is portable. Now we also have, in the Microsoft stack, we also have this concept of portable class libraries, which are really great. Portable class libraries are kind of the union of all of the different platforms. We've got Xbox, phone, and Windows 8, and all these different platforms have a lot of things in common. And so if you make a portable class library project, you can write to the things that are in common, and then those things can be shared across all your different projects. And so you could, for instance, put all of your models and view models into your portable class libraries project, and now all of a sudden you're sharing your models and view models between Windows Phone and Windows 8 and Xbox and, you know, all of these different places. So really a lot of thought needs to go into the architecture of it. And where I would point you is to the Pattern and Practices group at Microsoft. This is the space that they focus on. And there's some really great Windows 8 content. There was some chat about it yesterday in the chat room. I don't know exactly what the status of it is. I've seen it, and it looks great, but I don't think it's released quite yet. But just be looking for the Pattern and Practices group and what they release for architectural concerns. So I think that kind of wraps up Module 1, talking about design, the design of your application. Is there anything more you wanted to add?
No, I'm just excited now to see how we're going to start developing with all of this stuff that we've learned. This was all presentation, all the concepts, which are important.
We haven't even opened Visual Studio
yet. So the rest of the day is going to be a lot of code.
Yeah, lots of code. Cool. All right, so stick around. We're going to take a break and look forward to seeing you again soon.